and I was like a Westerner, like a bad Westerner. I was hungry, a little bit hungry, you know? Why the master don't want to explain me this and that? And I talked with my friend that I do on the team, and he said to me, oh, no, no, because it's not, he laughed, and he said to me, no, 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 it's not that he want to hide you something. It's that this is not the time to explain you that.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Cheological. I had a patient who recognized that she needed more patience. She wanted it too, and she was a devout Christian. And she says this to me. She says, I need patience, and I know better than to pray for that because I know how it goes. God isn't going to give me more patience. God is going to give me the situations and the circumstances that will give me the opportunity to learn some more patience. And right now, I simply don't have the energy to go through all that. Perhaps you've had experiences like this too, when patients say something and it rings so true that your life is never quite the same. It's so easy to ask for some kind of an end result, a wave of a magic wand, and poof, you're different. But it doesn't work that way. There are no shortcuts. The best we can do is put ourselves in front of the situations and the lessons that grow us in the direction where we'd like to arrive. Like my patient, who knew that patience could not arrive through her current way of approaching life, there were some edges to be worn off, perhaps some stances of the heart and mind that needed to be dissolved or set to the side. The refined and matured aspects of our spirit can only arise by having been lived through. It's a curious habit of mind to grasp at a particular quality or experience as if it was unattached to the formative set of experiences and circumstances. It's like wanting a rose without the supporting bramble of thorns. That patient was really smart. She saw that the state of being that she wanted was tangled up within situations and circumstances that would grow her into the person that she wanted to become. And she knew that it wasn't going to be easy. A lot would be asked of her. So I appreciated her perspective because it was just that, perspective. She could see the path and she knew it was the adversity that would be the teacher, the difficulties that would in turn give rise to the possibility of a different kind of life. Too often, I fall for the storyline that things are supposed to be easy just because I want them. Surely, if the universe is going to give me a glimpse of something, it must be because that's what it has in store for me. And indeed it does. But a heart willing to take on the troubles that go with transformation is essential gear for the journey. In a moment, we're going to get into a conversation with Philippe Caudet. He's a Spanish acupuncturist who got turned on to moxa in Brazil and then found himself deeply drawn into the Japanese Fukaya moxa tradition, which took him to Japan. You just never know where the path of medicine might lead you and the wonders that you're going to discover along the way. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Mayway Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Cheological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Mayway Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Mayway.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face, so subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Meiwei.com. This season and every season, trust Meiwei Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code CHEOLOGICAL at the time of sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool, a sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every two boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast Needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/CHEOLOGICAL to learn how. All right, friends, let's get into this conversation about moxa and how following a hunch can lead you to extraordinary places. I love talking to people about moxa because moxa is one of those things that I have not used that much in my practice. I have very sensitive lungs, and very smoky moxa is something that I've just not been able to work with so much. And so it's an area of practice that's a little bit mysterious to me. And I was talking with our friend Oren Cavitti, and he was saying, "Oh, Philippe has some moxa. You should talk to Philippe." So here we are. I know you do some Japanese tradition. I'm curious to know how you found your way into doing the moxa that you do.
Okay, that is very interesting what you say, because a lot of people don't know too much about the Japanese ideas on moxibustion, because they are a little bit different than the Chinese ideas.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
It comes from, it's no discussion about that moxibustion born in China, and nobody discussed this. But really, the story changed when the Japanese import Chinese medicine and import all kind of techniques to Japan, because they develop in a different way. And just also historical questions, no? The Japan closed its borders for two centuries, and it makes that all evaluates in a different sense. Then finally, moxibustion becomes a very popular therapy, not only for the practitioners, always also the people in home practice. And at the same time, certain techniques, very special, evaluates in a high level until I arrived to create a specialist of moxibustion. Then usually we talk and we consider moxibustion as a complement of acupuncture. It is the most usual idea. But really the Japanese arrived to a level of development that made that they create the figure of the specialist. someone who only do moxibustion. Well, this is my case. Nowadays, I am only a moxibustionist. That before I was practitioner of acupuncture. Also, I am physiotherapist. I will explain you a little bit more later.
Were you first an acupuncturist or were you first a physiotherapist?
Well, my story is a little bit strange. I don't know.
Really?
You want to listen to this?
You're an acupuncturist and you do moxibustion. You have a strange story. I am shocked.
yes. But I think that then possible you or the audience don't imagine when I say strange. Evidently, everyone feels his story as different than the others, no? But it's a little bit special.
Yeah.
And
what happened?
It begins when I was born, I have to say. Yeah. You know, I was born close to Barcelona, 200 kilometers to Barcelona in Spain. I don't know if you have been, but I recommend you.
Yes, I would love to come visit.
Yeah, and this is a region called Catalonia. Mm-hmm. Then the south of Catalonia, my region, is a very special place because this is the end of a river. This is a big delta. And there is, you can imagine, the landscapes, fields of rice, open spaces, the sea, because just the sea is there. Then at the same time, it's a special place in the sense of the esoteric believings. I mean, we have a lot of traditions about some kind of knowledge and some kind of predestinations, okay? And that is my case. I have to say to you, and I know that it's a little bit strange to listen, to hear the first time, then, well, my mom always explained that I was crying inside her. She listened to me crying inside her days before my birth. Mm-hmm. And in my tradition, it means that the children that are able to do this or who do this are children that are predestinated to heal the others because physically they cry because they can feel the suffering of the people.
Uh-huh. And so you were born into this.
Yeah. Imagine it's like a kind of God's gift, mm-hmm. something like this, okay? Then you have a special skill for heal the others. Then you can imagine that I pass all my childness, well, healing my neighbors, healing my family, healing the friends, and was a little bit stressing for me, because you can imagine a child doing this, and not only a child. I do this for a long time until I was a teenager.
So when you were a child,
yeah,
and you recognized that you had this sort of skill or ability,
yeah,
to heal others, what? I mean, were you aware of it at that time? Is this something that was conscious in any way?
Well, for me, it was normal. For me, it was normal and really was something that, well, if it's something that I must do, I do. You know? Then it was natural, not strange. What's stressing? Because I feel the whole heart is to take care of the others. Mm-hmm. Now I am a professional, Now it's very different. I understand a lot of things. But when I was a child, it was different.
Yeah.
It was something that I must do.
Would you say that you grew up with, I don't know how to say this, like an extra share of empathy for other people?
Yeah. Well, in some sense, was fantastic, okay? Mm. In some sense, was fantastic, okay? You imagine you are a child and you feel that you are different than the others, or at least you feel that you are different. Yeah, and at the beginning was fine, but after was a little bit hard. I say you can imagine when a neighbor called home and say, "Oh, I have a pain on my knee. Please come, Philip came." Okay, these kind of things, no? And they say, "Okay, you put the hands here and you wait, and all happened." Then yes.
So this all kind happened. Of thing happened for you when you were young.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Then for me, it was a strange beginning on life, okay? When I was 16, I say, stop. I was stressed and I wanted to be a normal teenager, okay? Then I say, stop, I don't want more to talk about this. And I took all these kind of things and I put this in a box in my mind and I keep there. Okay.
Yeah.
But the story really begins really begins at the moment. But after I decide, well, at 18, I decided to go to the university, and I wanted to be physical therapist. Well, it sounds...
What a surprise. You want to use your hands to help people.
Yeah, it was not new. It was not new, and was an election, I think, that maybe conditioned this, no? To my past. But really, was strange also, because destiny keep me that at that moment, I cannot enter in the university I wanted to study, physical therapies. Then I decide, okay, to prepare more the exams. But at the same time, I thought, well, this is a very easy thing to prepare the exams. Then I need to do anything more, something more. Then I took a newspaper, and in the newspaper I found an advertisement about a school of acupuncture and naturopathy. I say, well, for me it was very, very exotical. You can imagine. I came from a little city, very conservative. Then something that sounds or something linked to Asia or complementary medicine, it's something very, very, very strange and odd.
Oh, I would agree. I think for so many of us, especially of a certain age, the thought of doing acupuncture, it's so far out of the box. It's so far away from the reality that we'd grown up in. I mean, it's different now, but it wasn't when you were a kid.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same. It's the same as you say.
So you open up the newspaper. There's an advertisement to learn acupuncture. And what happened for you when you saw that?
Well, I didn't know why I say, okay, I want to study this. And well, I go to the school to study, study the first year of acupuncture. And really something happened at the end of the first year.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 18. No, 17. 17, 18. 17. Okay. I was very young.
You were a weird kid.
Yeah, I was the baby of the class. You can imagine all my mates were people on the 30s, 40s, 50s, no? More 40s than 50s. And I was the one of 17 there, like a rather abyss, no? You see what you do here, no? And well, I finished the year with a very strange feeling, no? What is that? I don't understand too much what happened here, no? Mm-hmm. But luckily, as a lot of times in life, someone who want to give you a message and you don't know, no? But
I've prepare the had message. A few of those experiences. They're extraordinary.
You know that, no?
Then
and I remember that the man said to me, okay, Philippe, I understand that you don't understand what happened here and what is all this kind of knowledge, but maybe you must to give you the opportunity to go and grow with this. And I say, wow. And I decide, yeah, okay, I will give me the opportunity. Oh, well, yeah. It was strange because really it was something out of my reality, you know, all the studies of acupuncture. No? And I was
so odd coming from where you did with the background you did. Acupuncture shows up, and yet there's something really right about that.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
yeah,
there's a part of you that knew, oh yeah, follow this. So then you finish your acupuncture education.
Yeah. I continued the studies, yeah. And when I was in the fourth year. In the third year, I enter in the university to study physical therapies. Then I think that I became first acupuncturist than physical therapist. I mean, always I say that when I went to the university, I had another mind and another eyes to see what the medicine or the allopathic medicine offers to me, you know? Another view. Well, I finished my studies. And I decided to open my clinic. Imagine, with 24 years old, you have your own clinic.
Yes.
You know? Open a door and say, okay, people, come, I will help you, no? And I did this for 10 years. 10 years.
So both acupuncture and physiotherapy.
Yeah. I do a combination. I felt that it was a good combination.
everyone, Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the eight extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well integrated diagnostic, theoretical, and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel or the sea of yang, the primal reservoir of yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of yang qi to body, mind, and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at Anne Cecil Sturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
It sounds like a really powerful combination along
with
you know, your background from your experiences of a child. You know, you've got hands that understand something about helping people. That sounds like a very potent combination.
Yeah, it's a good combination. Mm-hmm. And indeed, when I was 10 years of practice, I decided to write a book for physical therapies, a book on Chinese moxibustion. At the time, I only knew moxibustion as the moxa stick and the moxa box. Wow, these are two very safety techniques and very easy to explain. Then why not to write a book for the physical therapies, no? And it seemed a good idea. Mm-hmm. And well, I begin to do a research to write the book. And another time, destiny made me something strange and put me something strange on my way. What? I met physical therapists also in Brazil online. It was someone very nice, very generous, because it was someone who was close to die. He had a leukemia, and he decided to explain me all what he knew about Japanese moxibustion.
Now, how did you meet this person?
Well, on the net, I was trying to find information.
Okay.
And one day I met that there was someone teaching moxibustion in Brazil. Then I decided to contact him, no? And okay. Was like, you. Yes, like a contact, a special contact, no? Mm. Or special meeting. The man had written two books on Japanese moxibustion. It was very strange. I didn't know at that moment. And it was a surprise for me because I never listened talking about Japanese moxibustion. Indeed, I didn't know that it exists. It existed. Ah,
right.
There's a version.
I mean, you're using that really smoky stick moxa, those really smoky moxa boxes, which is one of the reasons why I never used moxa very much, because I can't handle that kind of smoke.
Yeah, it was my past.
Yes.
But the most beautiful thing that after this meeting, we passed a lot of days talking, and he tried to give me all the kind of informations, but I passed 3 weeks dreaming every night on moxibustion. Then on the morning, I wake up and I say to my wife, oh, moxibustion again. And my wife say, well, you are crazy. I say, no.
It's, my wife tells me that a lot too.
Yeah, but in that case, I say, no. Sure, it means something. I need to follow this. I need to find real person to learn this and to develop this, because I don't know, but seems that life said to me that follow that way. And well, it was a beautiful moment, because just that year, a master, maybe the only master on the style that I follow, this Fukaya style, just that year, he traveled to Boston to give a seminar. And I say, oh, I don't know anything about Japanese, but I talk more or less English, then I can try. Mm-hmm. Then imagine, not doubt, I take a plane and I went to
Boston.
Yeah, to Boston. Uh-huh. I remember the school organized for the master, no? And you can imagine a Japanese saying me, oh, I travel, you do the tour of the world and to do a seminar, and you do the same following on searching me. Then it was very, very strange situation also, because I thought, wow, these people is very funny and very, very generous with me. I don't know why, but we pass all the time talking about Moksha-Bhusti, not only in the seminar. We talk in the restaurants, we talk in the hotel, we talk in the breakfast, we talk. Please came to the room on the night and we talk, we continue talking, okay? Then I didn't know at that moment, but it seemed that he decided to get a student. And you know, in the traditional, in Japan, is not that I want a master. It's the master who decides who will be his student.
Yes, okay? Yes. There's a tradition of passing something along, and you're looking for someone to share it with.
Yeah. And it was the case. I had a unique experience there. And also I received my first Moksha treatment, Tairin Moksha-Bhusti. But I say to the master, okay, please, I want to receive an authentic Moksha-Bhusti, because I can see in the seminar that you do something adapted to the Westerners. No? I can feel this. Okay, you want to receive that. And you know, Michael, it was like an initiation. You know? You know, when you threw a stone on the water and you can see the wave, no? That is expanding. Then imagine that you have this on your back in different points.
So I just have to share this with you.
Please.
Because this is basically the experience of my first acupuncture treatment. Except a slight difference. They did a back treatment on me. It was two interns at a school. So two different people. The first person puts a needle in, and it's exactly as you describe. It's like throwing a pebble into a pond, and the waves ripple, and it's like the whole room is floating. And the second intern puts a needle in, and it goes thunk. It does nothing. And
nothing happened.
The first one puts a needle in, and it's the same experience of this watery, floating ripple that goes out to the horizon, and the next person puts a needle in and it goes thunk.
I thought, okay.
I don't even know what to think about that other than that is the weirdest thing that's ever happened in my life. But little did I know that it would set me off on a similar path. So when you say that it felt like an initiation and there was this like watery ripple thing happening, I can completely relate to what you're saying.
Yeah. It's the same, but with fire. Mm-hmm. Then the sensation or the feelings were along 3, 4, 5 days, feeling the same every day and still, no? Then was crazy, and I say, wow, this is my way, no? Mm-hmm. I came back to Spain, pretty excited, with a lot of things on my back to work. I began to work in a very passionate way, trying all. And you know, when you are passionate with something, it's pretty usual and normal to have a lot of doubts. And I have,
you know, isn't that funny?
Millions.
Yes, it is funny. And I've had the same experience. You're passionate, it draws you forward, and at the same time there are doubts. It's a very curious kind of yin-yang relationship. So there was a piece of you that knew this was right. And there was a piece of you that had doubts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my piece that say it was right was the piece that saw the passions changing very quick. Because if something happens with this kind of moksha or with either Moksha-Bhusti, is that all happens faster. And it's very powerful. And usually when I teach, for example, I say always to the people, okay, take care. The most difficult thing is not to do Moksha-Bhusti, is to stop. Just to understand when you must to stop, because it's easy to do an over-treatment, it's easy to do something that is not right. No? Then, well, I had a lot of doubts at that moment, and I was alone. I was in Spain with not the possibility of contact with the Japanese sensei. And the only solution for me was to try to find my own answers. And I know that it sounds not, I don't know how it sounds, but not fantastic, but it was the only solution I had. But what happened? I continued working. At that moment, I wrote my first book, because also another thing that I took from the Japanese experience in Boston was the idea that really this kind of knowledge is disappearing. Still, there are people doing moxibustion, millions of people. Mainly, people practice moxibustion as a complement.
Yes.
Then the case of people who only is doing moxibustion as a treatment is very few people doing this.
You know, it's very few. I've got a friend who used to live in Japan. He spent a lot of time in Japan. And he talked about that you could go to a place and that's all they did. You would just go to get a moxibustion treatment. Yeah. It was not a complimentary thing. It was not an add-on thing. It was not something that, oh, I couldn't do this with needles. I'll try to do it with moxa. The only thing they did was moxa.
Yeah.
And this is what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I was fascinated with that. For the reason I wrote the book, the first book, okay, to try at least to save this information for the world. Because I felt that no lot of people was practicing in this way. Well, when my back of doubt and my back of my own answers were full, I cannot resist. I need to go to Japan. Then, oh, but you don't talk in Japanese. What do you do? What you will do? Say, oh, no, but sure, I will find someone who translate for me.
Yes, yes. You know, I think this gets us through so many places in life. We see a path we want to go, or something opens up for us, and we look at it and go, that's impossible. But then you decide, you know what? It doesn't matter if it's impossible, because there's a way through it. I don't know what the way is. I'll find out as I go. That takes a little bit of courage, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then I took the plane to Japan.
Now, what did your wife have to say about this?
Okay, well, you can imagine my wife at that moment was pregnant.
Oh, my God.
With a baby. Yeah. Yeah, it was terrible. It was very stressing for me because, you know, Japan, if you are in the most traditional ways, you must to follow also some steps. It's not easy. It's not, I came to Japan and I want to visit you. Okay, this is not. Okay, you must to do appointments. Okay, you must to contact with the people before and introduce you. And evidently, you must to say who you are and as possible, is someone who must to introduce you. No? Okay. Then you can imagine I have a big program for visit people. It was my first time in Japan. I was very excited. And suddenly, the disaster of Fukushima, nuclear central, happens. One week before I travel. Then you can imagine the disaster, the news were terrible. My wife was pregnant, waiting our son. Then what you will do? All the people said to me, oh, Philippe, you must not to go. In your situation, you must be in home. But fortunately, my wife say, okay, Philippe, you can do what you consider. No problem. If you consider you must to go, you go. Really, finally, I decide not to go. I decide not to go. And you can imagine for me what it meant. All the appointments and all the project prepared for a long time and all the work done. And now I cannot go. Then I decide to say, excuse me. And I send a lot of letters saying, okay, I'm sorry, but I cannot. The situation made me postpone. And later I will come. And fortunately, all the people received that fine. All the people say, okay, no problem, Philippe. We wait you. And it was that. Two months after, when all seemed controlled and my baby was in the world, I traveled there.
And then you go.
I traveled there. Yeah. And there all the story, all the Japanese stories begins in a strong way, in a strong way, I have to say. Because I met the master and I say, oh, look at master, I have all these questions and also I have all these answers that are my answers, but I don't know if it is is this true or not? I want that you said me if I am true. And he said to me, oh, Philippe, you had put words to something that we never put words. I mean, you find a way to explain our way of doing. Because the Japanese, you know that the Japanese teaching is based on observation. Traditionally is with this. The master do, yes. You observe, and you observe during years.
Very similar in China. Students hardly ever ask questions.
Yeah.
Your job is to observe and be able to do what the teacher does. And if you're lucky, later they'll talk to you about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then it's a little bit similar in this sense. No, and then maybe one day the master authorizes you to practice something, to repeat, maybe to prepare something for him. And after years, maybe one day you can do. Well, it was not my case. I was alone in Spain doing, working, researching with all the knowledge that he passed me before. Okay? Then he was surprised. Okay? You had put your words to something that we never put words.
Wow.
And, well, it made that. If before they accepted me and he accepted me especially, he was more strong. I mean, he decided more to teach me more things and to introduce me more things. And from that moment, we did a very deep relation. Then, well, this is the first part.
So, you know, this is, I've noticed something over the years with certain teachers. They have a lot to share and they want to share it.
Yeah.
But if you don't have enough experience or you don't have the right mindset or you don't have the ability to take and understand what they have to teach, then they can only teach you to a certain point.
Yeah.
Because the limit is not them giving you information. The limit is you being able to assimilate and understand and comprehend and in some way make it your own.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you showed up in Japan having already done a piece of that work. You were kind of ripe for that situation.
And you say a big truth, this one that you say, because really, really I remember this story, okay? I remember at the beginning staying with the master. He was explaining me something. But I feel strange Western feeling, okay? I felt that he was avoiding to explain me something. And I was like a Westerner, like a bad Westerner, I was hungry, a little bit hungry, you know? Why the master don't want to explain me this and that? And I talked with my friend that I do on the team, and he said to me, oh, no, because it's not, he laughed, and he said to me, no, it's not that he want to hide you something. It's that this is not the time to explain you that. And I say, oh, my God. But why he don't know that this is my time, and why he knows this, no? And it was very funny because I never did the question that I had to the master. Years before, one day, we were walking on the street in I don't remember if it was in Barcelona, because I invited him to teach. Okay. Then we was walking and this story came to my mind. And also the question I had. And at the same time, myself, in my mind, I say, oh, now I know the question. It's not necessary I do the question to the master. You know, really was what you say, Michael, that some people and some masters want to explain to the people, but maybe it's not your moment. It's not your time. You need to wait. Because now I know the knowledge, it's something that you grow and grow. It's like to do different steps. Then you cannot pass from the one to the five. Jumping. It's crazy. Sure, you can broke your leg.
You know, this might be a difference between Eastern and Western or this.
Yeah.
I mean, as we're having this conversation, I realize so often I have this linear mind and the linear mind goes, you go from here, step one, step two, step three. If I've done step one, step two, step three, I should be able to do step four. But I think that often the world and especially medicine and our learning of medicine, it's not that linear. I mean, we do have to put in the work and you do have to have the basics and you need some experience. But again, for some reason, I'm coming back to that word of ripeness. It's like a piece of fruit. has to be a certain way before it's like, oh, ready to eat it.
Yeah.
And these processes are not linear, and they require of us as practitioners a lot of attention to what we're doing and a lot of time spent in, you know, I'm not really sure about this.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, even as we're treating people and we're trying to be helpful and we're trying to understand, it seems like a lot of our time is spent in not quite knowing yet.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely.
Okay. Completely. So then it leads to this question for me. When you know that you're in that space where you don't quite know, but you have to keep going forward, how do you manage to do that?
Well, you must to trust. You must to trust. You must to trust on you, on life, and on the others. Sometimes it's very difficult to trust on the others, you know?
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
I think that people is nice. It's nice. It's true that there are some people that are not doing right, but really, really, if you walk nice on life, it's easy to find other people who walk on the same speed as you, no? Then if you are generous, people are generous with you. Then I think that we must to trust. Still, we have fear, no? And now the time is the time of fear more than ever before, no?
Yes, yes.
But we need to continue trusting each other. We need to trust. We ask to the patients that they trust with us, no?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I will take care of you. Then it's the same. We need to trust with the patients and with other mates. We must to share. Then all this history that I explained to you put me in an order of the necessity of evaluates the idea of teaching and spreading this around the world. Now is what I am doing. No, I am trying to teach in different countries to open the mind about the fire and the use of moxibustion, because it's necessary for the war. Now we are suffering this time of, we don't know what will happen. Okay, but something that you can be sure, it's about you. You are there. Then if you are there, you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Then for me, it's a way of walking, trust. Sometimes you can fall. It's true. Sometimes you can be wrong. True. It's possible. But trust. Stand up and continue walking. Because this life is very short. I'm very angry with the time of life, no? Because it's very short. And have a lot of very interesting things, very interesting people, very interesting knowledge. You cannot imagine when I listened what you were doing, no? When Oren explained me what you do with the podcast, and I say, mm-hmm. Wow, this is fantastic, because he's putting a lot of information that maybe is very difficult to give to the people in this position of all the people who have a media, no? An iPad or a telephone or a computer, no? And in this way, they can be connected with the others.
I feel really fortunate that I'm in the position that I'm in, that we have the technology that we have in this day and time, and that there is this opportunity to connect us up with each other when we might not otherwise have ever crossed paths. There is so much diversity to East Asian medicine. There's not just one East Asian medicine. There's like many medicines. Yeah. Many traditions, many ways of thinking about things. And it's, you know, it's like what we learn in school is just, it's like, here's your first textbook so you can start to learn to think about this. And then the whole world gets to become your teacher if you do what you were just talking about. You remain curious, you remain open, you seek out that which draws you.
Yeah.
And then we have this fantastic opportunity maybe to receive something from someone who's looking to pass something along so we can help other people. So, you know, I think we're all very fortunate in this way. And it's easier than ever to be generous. And yes, I think we're in a very difficult moment, not just here in the United States where it's really a mess, but I mean, the whole world It's you know, we're truly all in this together at this moment. So I want to turn this now to talking more about the moxibustion you do.
Okay.
Right, because you're not doing moxibustion just for heat.
No.
Tell us what you're doing with moxibustion.
Well, I have to say you that after the meeting with the first master, mm-hmm. I met another person, very important, who introduced me a new dimension. The second person was the son of Fukaya-sensei. Fukaya-sensei was a master, a big master on the 20th century on Japanese moxibustion. Mm-hmm. I explain this for explain you about this kind of moxibustion. You must think that we use moxibustion or direct moxibustion as an acupuncturist use the needles. What I mean? When I began in the field of moxibustion, of Japanese moxibustion, all the books I got, and also all the information I've received, I believe it that they talk about symptomatic treatments and points for symptomatic actions.
Much like the way we learn acupuncture, right?
Yeah. And maybe it was my ignorance at that time, and I thought, maybe I don't understand too much what the master say, and maybe I lost some information, but where is the point? It was my big worrying, okay? This is like acupuncture, no? Then there is organization. There is some kind of organization on the system, no? And well, it was one of my findings. Where to find the points? And the Japanese never explained this. The Japanese only describe the point is there. Then I develop a system to find the points in every disease. Then I develop a system to find really how the body try to adapt yourself to the disease. Then we apply moxibustion to dissolve these adaptations.
Wait, say that again. The person has a problem because they're having an adaptation to the disease. The disease, their symptoms are the body's attempt to deal with the disease.
Yeah.
Your job with moxibustion is to give them a different adaptation.
No, is indeed is to recover the normality.
Recover
what is
the
the normal function.
The normal function. Okay.
Well, then I think that something that clarifies more that is the idea of the point. That we have a special idea about the point. Okay, this is historical. This is not me. It's historical. At the first time, at the beginning, the Japanese thought that the good point for direct moxibustion. I have to say you that always I talk about direct moxibustion. Okay, this is the main technique on the Japanese field. The other techniques are more complementary, I have to say.
Say that again?
Yeah, the other techniques are a complement.
Then the main moxibustion.
The main technique in moxibustion is direct moxibustion.
Opposite of how we usually do it here in the West.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very curious that. Then at the beginning, the Japanese thought that the good point for direct moxibustion were the point which you touch and you feel something there. Mm-hmm. You feel a mass, you feel a density, a different density than the other tissues. And it is the good point, or it was the idea of a good point. After, with the time, it changed to it evolves to the idea that the good point were the painful point. The point mm-hmm. that you touch mm-hmm. and was painful. Okay, that's a good point. And finally, in the 20th century, and just was Fukaya-sensei, say to the people, okay, the best point, really the efficacy to get best results is when the point have the two circumstances. Have an induration, a density, and also has a reactivity. Mm-hmm. Then this is the perfect point. And what is really this kind of situation? This is a stagnation of qi and blood. Then really, when we use direct moxibustion, or at the beginning was conceived for that, we are treating all the stagnations of qi and blood.
Which is exactly what we talk about with acupuncture.
Yeah. But it's very strong, the idea. We have someone on the history of moxibustion of the 16th century, was a master called Goto Konsen, a Japanese, who developed some kind of law about the stagnation of qi. This man said us that it doesn't matter which kind of disease you have, you always have a stagnation of qi. then for reestablish the health, for recover the health, you need to unblock, to disperse this stagnation of qi. Mm-hmm. And you know that qi and blood always go together.
The Teixin is a gentle and effective tool for treating patients without inserting acupuncture needles. Using a Teixin causes no pain or discomfort, allowing practitioners to treat even the most sensitive of people. Using the Teixin invites practitioners to evolve senses and dormant capacities. Humans are capable of great subtlety, far greater than we often believe. Working with the Teixin compels us to confront many of our assumptions about what makes acupuncture effective. This exciting journey of self-discovery helps practitioners to refocus how they practice acupuncture. If you'd like to dig in deeper, check out episode 303, where I talk about all things Teixin with Dr. Bob Quinn. Blue Poppy carries a series of handcrafted Teixins created by a silversmith cooperative in San Pancho, Mexico. They also offer many videos on their YouTube channel, which provides basic instruction on how to use a Teixin and other non-insertive tools that they carry. Dr. Bob Quinn's best-selling book on how to effectively use the Teixin is also available. Visit www.bluepoppy.com for Teixins and other fine Japanese acupuncture tools.
Yes, they do. So when you're treating, are you thinking of some kind of, I know this is a very common idea, I'm wondering if this works for you, that there's some kind of a root treatment where you're really trying to set the whole organism into a better state of balance. And then there's the branch treatment where you're really specifically trying to deal with whatever that thing is that the person probably walked in your door with and wanted to have be different.
Hmm. Then, yes, I say to you that we focus on treat stagnations of qi and blood, okay? Mm-hmm. Then for us, the best tool for do this or do that is direct moxibustion, because we go inside, we go deep. We arrive to the fascia level, we arrive to the muscle level, and really we can unblock with the vibration and with a little burn, the combination of that, okay? Really, we try to unblock to recover what? The flow.
Flow of qi and blood, which
flow
is...
Flow of qi and blood.
I mean, this is such a basic tenet of East Asian medicine, that yeah. If the qi and the blood are moving, then the body takes care of itself.
Then this is the idea, the main idea that we follow. We try to find the way, or the stagnations that body did for adapt you to the disease. Now, then if we unblock that, you recover.
Yes. Now, when you do this, are you thinking in terms of a theory, or are you just putting your hands on people and following what your hands tell you?
No, really it's not theory. This is very physical. It's
very
something
physical.
That you can touch. You can feel the point in duration. You treat with your moxa, and after you must to finish, or you know that you finish, when you change the circumstances of the point, the density or the reactivity, then you know that at the moment you had to unblock the system. Then the most beautiful thing is that, because you had done a little, very tiny burn, it evaluates still. Then this stimulus continue. Then it's amazing, because the patient can explain a lot of things, and you can theorize a lot with your ideas of diagnosis or with your ideas of syndrome, for example. No? Mm-hmm. Here, there is not that ideas. We don't use that. We only use palpation. We feel your situation. We change the situation. And we know after the treatment, we know that it had changed. Is that... You asked me about the root and the branch. Sorry. I have to say that is not a symptomatic treatment. We have styles, very few. Mainly there are recognized two styles nowadays, the Sawada style and the Fukaya style. Okay. On the Fukaya style, for example, we have a root treatment that is based on the location. Where is the root treatment for Fukaya style? Is in the interscapular area. I have a question. Which organs are there, Michael? Which main and principal organs are there?
Interscapular area, I'm thinking heart and lung.
Heart and lung. And they are the responsible of circulation of qi and blood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they're emblematic of the circulation of qi and blood, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, in that sense, then always you must to be worried to have this area unblocked. Then for us, the root treatment is to unblock this area. Because always your body, especially when you have a chronic disease, when you have a long time, a place that must to block is that area. Then this is the root area for us. We unblock that, and after we use to find other points, more maybe symptomatics.
Okay, this is really interesting. One of the things I remember from my schooling, and I see this show up in clinic all the time, is just this one point on the outer bladder line called Gao Huang Shu. And, you know, and they talk about that if there's a disease process going on, it'll go to the Gao Huang, and that point is going to be sensitive. There's a lot of people that point will be exquisitely sensitive on. And I'm thinking about where it's located, and it's right in that area that you're talking about.
Yeah. You cannot imagine which number, which big amount of disease you can treat only on blocking this area. Because this is the main area. This is the lung. This is the heart. This is the basis of the body. Then if you focus there, and also another interesting thing is that we don't use too much points. We use a reduction of points. At least we prefer use an average of 4-5 points, not more. Then the idea, this is one of the ideas of Fukaya Sensei, okay, was you must to treat well the point. Mm-hmm. The point itself is not a good point. The point is a good time. It's a good point when you treat correctly the point.
It's not about the number of points you use. It's about the quality of your attention to the points.
Yeah. And discover evidently the main point in the question, no? Mm-hmm. Then palpation here, it's very important. We don't understand moxibustion without palpation. I mean, this kind of receipts that you can find on the books. This point is very good for that. Or you mox at that point for this effect. We must to go there. We must to feel what happened on the point. And in relation to what we find on the point, we decide the technique. For example, this direct moxibustion is very clear for this kind of unblocking the stagnations of qi and blood, okay? But if you go there to the point and the point is empty, you will say to me, Philippe, it's empty. If it's empty on the surface, we need a supplement technique. In that cases, we will use a direct moxibustion.
So wait, say that again. If the point is empty.
Empty, for example, on the surface. On the surface, it's very important.
On the surface, it's empty. Now, if you palpate deeper, maybe you'll find it's stagnated?
Could be. I have to say, we have a basic concept. It helps you to understand.
So you have to go in and really feel and see what's there.
Yeah, no discussion. The most basic concept on Japanese medicine is the idea of Kyo and Jitsu, emptiness and fullness. This is yin-yang, okay? This is very easy, okay? Mm-hmm. Then
It's easy in concept.
Yeah.
Practice is a different thing.
But in palpation, it's very real. Mm-hmm. I have to say, when you have an emptiness, it means that very close, you have to have a fullness. Sure. When you have an stagnation of qi and blood, you also have very close, empty places. Because for creating a stagnation, you must to take the energy and the blood and the substances from other parts. Not disappear the energy, the energy only change the place and is stagnant in the place. Then you can have two options. You can treat the fullness or you can treat the emptiness. Then two different situations that you must to treat with different techniques, evidently.
Yes.
For this reason.
And you could treat either one and the other should change.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Indeed, the traditional Japanese, they used to do only direct moxibustion. And in that way, they treat the emptiness, treating the fullness of the stagnation. Nowadays, we know more techniques than we can do combinations. I say to you that nowadays I only treat with moxa. It was a decision 10 years ago when I begin on the Japanese field of moxibustion, I decided to left my needles. And I can say to you, I can do with moxibustion 90-95% that you can do with a needle. But we have a plus, that moxibustion can do something that needle never can do. Mm-hmm. Moxibustion can supplement. can add energy to the system, then it makes more powerful. Then I don't want to say that moxibustion is better than needling. It's not my intention.
Yeah, no, okay? I'm not hearing that it's better. I'm hearing that there's something that it has the capacity to do that you can't quite do with a needle.
Is the idea that you can do, and I hope the people that are listening us can understand that you can do more than you think with moxa, than you learn on the school. Sure, you can go farther. You can do farther. In my case, it was a decision. I left the needles as a decision to show to the world that we can do a lot of things with moxa more than we think usually. But I recognize the needle is very good and very nice. Needle have something that moxa don't have. Needle can, it's like tune, can tune perfectly the level of chi that you want to move or you want to disperse. Moxa cannot do it.
Well, can't you adjust the dosage to some degree by the amount of moxa or when you snuff it out? Or, I mean, aren't there ways of adjusting the dosage with that as well?
We adjust the dosage based on our palpation. I say to you that we have some different densities, or the point half density, no? We have three main densities. We have something that is similar to a stone, something similar to an eraser.
Mm-hmm. And kind of a gummy thing?
Yeah. And something similar to a sponge.
Uh-huh.
Okay, these right. three
yeah,
states.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That, I mean, all those make sense. I felt every single one of those. I hadn't thought about it in that way, but having those distinctions
is
very, very helpful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in that case, you can choose the number of cones that you need. Mm-hmm. Or if you need to continue doing or stop. Also, you can know the prognosis, because if you have an induration as a stone, you know that it will be hard to do and it will need fewer, more treatments. Also, at the same time, if you have something like an eraser and you treat and you change this eraser for a sponge, you know that it is easy, that we are close to be recovered. Then we use especially palpation and density to decide. We have a rule on the tradition of moxibustion. There is a rule to know the dosage. The rule is something like, apply a cone. After apply a cone, ask to the patient, do you feel the heat? If the patient say, I don't feel the heat, okay, you must to continue. Just arrive at the patient say, now I feel the heat. This is the first part of the rule. Mm-hmm. The second part say, apply a cone. If the patient say, oh, I feel too much that, okay, you must to continue applying until arrive to a normal heating sensation.
So this one is Kyo, one is Jitsu.
Yeah, but in that case, the second part is a little bit dangerous. What happened? You must to be sure that you are in the point. Because if you had not done a good location and you put a cone in a point that have not stagnation, it's very painful and very burning.
Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be helpful.
No. It's a loss of time. It's an amount of pain for the patient that not sense. Then really, we only use the points when we have reasons to use the point, because the points show us that it has reasons.
I suspect it takes some time to fine-tune your senses to know where the point is and what kind of point it is.
Yeah. Yeah, really, is the big secret is that. Is to understand the techniques is very easy. With practice, finally you get the technique, okay? But really, the clinical skill is to understand where the points appear and in every situation, no? Then we base all the focus on palpation. If you are able to locate the point or to find the point, you have the solution.
You just have to find the point. And you're not doing this with your mind. I mean, I think one of the things about, I think many of us learned acupuncture and finding points, it was a very mental model. Oh, they have this point treats that. It's a very by the book, it's a very mental sort of game, right? You got these mental maps and you're connecting things up. Oh, this connects to that. I'll treat that point. What you're talking about is a way of engaging not so much with thought, but with like one body to another body and listening in a way that doesn't have a lot to do with the rational mind. It's got a lot more to do with sensing than with thinking.
Well, we use thinking. I have to say that the maps, the charts, the atlas that we use, we use that. It helps. It helps in the sense, in which sense? It put us very close to the point. Well, why? We have another idea behind of that. Why a point is a point? A point is a point because something happened there. Yeah, and then if something must to happen, it's easier that happens in something or in a place that we consider a point than in another place. But I have to say you, sometimes that is happening doesn't happen just in the regular point, in the point that we have on the map. Sometimes it happened some millimeters on the side, or maybe behind. Then we don't say that we don't use the thinking, or we don't say the study. We study a lot. The point, you must know that, no? When you have a book of Moxie Booster in front of you, you must read that the author recommend you that point. But these points are only recommendations. You must to go there. You must to go there.
I love it. These points are recommendations. This is a recommendation.
Yeah. It sounds strange, but it's that.
No. It doesn't sound strange at all. So often in my clinical work, I recognize that I've got an idea and it seems like a good idea and it makes sense in my mind. And I go in and I start working with a point or, you know, I often use needles more than moxibustion, but I'll go in and I'll start working with something and then I'll check the pulse or the tongue or I'll palpate something and I'll go, you know what? That was a great idea, but it's proven wrong by reality, right? I had an idea, but the body is responding and telling me, try again. Something else going on here.
Yeah, reconsider the idea.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, when I think... I mean, I've had a little training in Japanese acupuncture when I was in school. And I remember every single Japanese acupuncture teacher saying, the point is probably somewhere in here, but you have to go and find it. And they would talk about that millimeter difference. It's like, well, no, you're in the right area, but it's like, it's not there. It's a little bit over here, right? Feel that. You know, you have to get in there and really look for it.
Yeah. Then imagine that you have a key to open the door. You must put the key on the lock. If you don't put there, you cannot open the door. Then sometimes the lock is not just in the point that we suspect or we wait. It's just on the side, or maybe it's moving. For the reason we give a very importance to palpation. You have a lot of importance to palpation.
I lived in Taiwan for a little while, and there was a lock on the first apartment that I lived in. And it was one of those funny locks where you put the key in and then you have to hold the key just right. And if you hold the key just right, the lock just easily opens. And if you don't hold the key in exactly the right way, it just doesn't open. The lock is in the keyhole, but you have to be very attentive to what's happening inside of that keyhole.
Yeah, is the same? Yeah. It's the same. Then remember, the book and the list of points are always recommendations. Also for another thing, the author, when someone say to us, use that point and that point and that point, is because the circumstances or the person or the persons that he treated had that points in that circumstances. But maybe your patient have a similar situation, but not the same points.
Clinic is hard, isn't it?
Yes, of course. But it's a passion. Really, really something that I think that it's an adventure. Every day when you open the door of the clinic, you never know what will happen, what you will find, and what you will do. You have your lines, your protocols of working. But really, I think that body and reality go over our expectations. No, you wait, but sometimes go over.
You never know. I mean, I find for myself, it's the joy of clinic. And at times it really is the difficulty and struggle with clinic is that you don't know, you have to be attentive to what's happening in this moment, this moment, this moment, this moment. Yeah, it's one of the great things about the work in a way.
But we have a strong point, Michael, and I think that the people who are working on acupuncture and all kind of healing techniques, we have a strong point that the world needs that we accompany people. If we are able to go with the people, I mean, to say to someone, okay, you have this problem, and I am with you, and I will go with you to all the difficulties and all the suffering that you have, but I am here, no?
Yes.
To feel you're not alone is something that all the therapists can give to the patients, and it's the big deal, I think.
Philippe, I really appreciate that sentiment. I hadn't thought about it in that way. And I hear you say it in this moment, that a piece of what we do is we have a willingness to accompany the patient wherever they're going. That is, that really rings true for me. That's a deep piece of why I think this kind of medicine that we practice in these variety of different ways can be so powerful, because to somehow see somebody as they are, who they are, and accompany them.
That's a rare
gift.
It is to pass from the mind, mm-hmm. from the head to the heart. Yes. Is that the change? No, then if we are able to do this, all change completely. When we say, okay, we take care of the patients, we love the patients, we say that, no, but sometimes it only works, only words. Really, you are doing that when you are accompanying the patient.
Yes.
And what it mean.
So it really is a kind of medicine from the heart.
Totally, completely. Mm-hmm. I am sure.
Well, this is, I think, a great place to wind it up for the moment. Before we do, tell us where people can find you on the internet. Now, have you written books on what we've been talking about?
Yeah, I had written some books, but I'm sorry, but in Spanish. And now, in Spanish, in Portuguese, in French. But now I am working on my first translation of one of my books. I hope to have this one soon. It's a book about location of points with a string. It's a very old technique, Japanese technique. We take a string and we measure the body and we can get the point, the moxa point. And I hope to soon have the book. I have a website. I have two websites.
Okay. I will put that information on the show page and people can just go right to it and click. Are you teaching? I mean, if people wanted to learn more about the kind of work you do, is that a possibility?
Yeah. I am teaching around the world. Mm-hmm. Then in theory now, 1 month ago, I had to be in Australia in English. I have to say, I told you about English teaching, okay? Then I hope one day to come to the United States. Sometimes someone take me. Indeed, I had an agreement to go that year, but with the corona,
everything
was canceled.
Changed.
But maybe in the future, I will stay here in USA. And if not, I teach also in Barcelona, in Spain.
Great. So we can go to Barcelona.
Yeah, I like why not? Why not? This is
no, it sounds good
it's
to
a
me.
Good excuse.
Except
it's
I'm an American and they won't let us into the EU at this point.
Yeah, and I like the social media. Then I have an Instagram account, I have a Facebook account.
Great.
with my name, Philippe Caudet. Then if the people want to enjoy Moxa things, because I only talk about Moxa. And also articles. I have articles published in the North American Journal of Oriental Medicine, the NIJOM, and also in the ACU, in the Osaka Journal, well, in some kind of article of journals in English, then I think that even that it's not hard to find me. It's very easy.
Okay, that sounds
great.
Again, I'll make sure that's all on the show notes page. Philippe, thank you so much for this conversation today.
Thank you to you. It has been a big pleasure. And I hope that something that people listen can be used to accompany more the people. Thank you.
Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight,
share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.